Good morning. We're glad you're here. If you're a preteen, we want you to go. Get out. Go. No, I'm just kidding. Carol Reddy's there for you guys, so just head on out the door. We've been, over the past couple of weeks, we've been in our home improvement series, talking about building relationships that last a lifetime. And the first week, we talked about building a foundation and how it's important when you enter into a relationship to have a strong foundation, a foundation of faith, a foundation of character and friendship. And then the second week, we talked about how it's important that your relationships have commitment. And we liken commitment to the walls of a house. Commitment brings boundaries and protection and shelter from stuff that could infiltrate your relationship and attack it from the outside. And this week we're talking about romance. We're talking about the color of romance and how romance brings vibrancy and color and life to a relationship. Now, I know what you're thinking. What moron builds a house and paints it before they put a roof on? Well, you know, it's our series, so you just deal with it. I'm just kidding, no. It just seemed to fit. Valentine's Day was yesterday, so we're talking about romance this morning. I gotta let you know a couple of things before we get going. The first one is, when we're talking about relationships this morning, we're really talking about relationships as a married couple. So if you're single, or even if you're dating somebody or engaged, when we say relationships, we're really talking about married relationships. The second thing that you need to know is that I am probably the least qualified person on staff to be talking about romance. I am probably the least romantic person on staff. So this is going to be an exercise in do what I say, not what I do. Let me just give you a couple of examples. Jamie and I were friends for a long time. We met at Bible college. We had been friends for the entire year. I invited her over. There's a delay between when she could get home and the end of school, so I was like, why don't you just come to our place? You can hang out for a week or so, and then you can go on your way up to Prince Rupert. And so we're in Port Alberni hanging out, and sparks start to fly. And so I'm like, hey, I'm kind of into her. Like, let's see how this goes. So I go to ask her if she wants to go, like, start dating me. And so I'm nervous, and I'm like, so where do you think that we're at in our relationship? And she's like, I don't know, you tell me. And so I'm like scrambling. I'm like, oh, what do I do? I'm like, so hypothetical situation, what would you say if somebody said that we were dating? It's smooth, real smooth. And so she's like, yes. I'm like, boom, done. Okay, we're dating. That's fantastic. The next thing is, so we're dating, and Jamie always wore mittens. She wore mittens constantly. And so I thought I would be, you know, a great boyfriend, and a bunch of friends of mine were going down to the MEC swap sale. So I'm like, guys, when you go down, you got to get her a nice pair of, like, fleece mittens. It's going to be fantastic. You know, fleece pair of mittens, can you do that? Yeah, we got it taken care of. So they go down, they're at the swap sale, they come back, they bring me the pair of mittens. And so I'm like, awesome, I can't wait to give these to her. I'm like, this is going to be so fun. So I get them, and I'm like, hey, I have a present for you, Jane. And she's like, oh yeah, what is it? I'm like, there's your mittens, I got you some mittens. And she's like, wow, thanks, Nate. And she, like, goes to put them on, and she's like, they're two left-handed mittens. So me being the super suave guy that I am just said, well, if you turn one inside out, you can wear one on both hands. You'll be fine. And so that is kind of my reputation as a romantic. I have missed far too many important days and Valentine's days and first Mother's Day as a mom and all of these kinds of things. So Yes, this is going to be an exercise in do what I say, not what I do. But I got to tell you, I have come a long way. I have come a long way. So it's been said that any married man should forget his mistakes. There's no use in two people remembering the same thing. Because I was telling my wife about, you know, I was going to share some stories, and then she came up with a laundry list of them, and I was like, thanks for that. If we're going to be romantic in our relationships, then we really need to understand what the other person is looking for. So we're going to take a survey of the sexes, or surveying the sexes. Each one of us has a real tangible need that needs to be met. Now, these are generalizations, but each one of us have these deep yearnings that we need to be met as a both male and female. So we're going to first look at the guys' needs. What do guys need? Guys need to be needed. Guys need to have this sense that what I'm doing is important. What I am contributing to the family is important, and only I can make that happen. Guys need to have the sense that if I don't do this, stuff is going to happen. It's important that I do blank. It's important that I take out the garbage. It's important that I go to work to provide for my family. That's why you often see guys have a struggle if they're not providing, if they lose their job and they're not providing for their family. They want to feel like they're contributing in some way, shape, or form. They need to be needed. Guys need to be respected. The second one is guys need to be respected. Ephesians 5:33 says this, however, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. A guy needs to know that his opinion counts for something. So when a guy says to his wife, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to go to the craft show with you. And the wife is like, oh, come on, you'll just love it. No, I don't want to go. No, you just come with me. It'll be okay. Guy wants to know that his opinion counts for something. So he's being disrespected in that moment when you're not validating what he feels or his opinion. But it goes conversely. If you are talking about your guy and you say great things about him, talk all you want. But guys don't like being thrown under the bus when their woman says, you know, my husband has this really bad foot odor and I can't deal with it anymore, you know? Guys want to know that they're going to be protected, that they are going to be respected. And finally, guys want to be fulfilled in what they do. And this can come in a variety of ways, shapes, or forms. Part of it is sexually, yes. Guys really want to be seen as their wife's personal James Bond. You know, they want to feel like what they do is important, that they are their hero. They are a hero to their wife. You know, poker playing and gun toting and all. They want to feel like their wife's hero. And so guys really have these three basic needs. They need to be needed, they need to be respected, and they need to be fulfilled. Now, girls, on the other hand, girls have an entire different set of needs. Girls need affection. Girls need, this affection, we're talking kisses, we're talking back rubs, we're talking notes, we're talking all sorts of romantic, kind of affectionate things. And this has nothing to do with foreplay or sex. Girls want to feel affection. They want the little notes. They want the rose on the table. They want to know that they are important to their man and that they are loved by him. Girls also want honesty or open communication. Girls physiologically have far more connections in their brain with the verbal and emotional side of things that go on in there that they need to verbalize and talk and have open communication. So guy's sitting there at the breakfast table reading his newspaper, and the girl just starts talking. The guy's thinking, why are you talking to me? I'm reading my newspaper. And the girl's thinking, if he's not talking to me, then he's not communicating with me, and I need a sense of open and honest communication. I need to know what you're feeling. I need to know what you're like. That's why girls spend hours on the phone with their girlfriends, because they can just talk, and it's great. But girls also need that connection with a guy where they can feel that open and honest communication. And finally, the girls need protection. And by protection, I mean they need to know that their family unit is taken care of. They need to know that their guy is investing in their family unit, that they care deeply about what's going on in their family. So girls need affection. They need to feel like they are loved. Girls need open and honest communication. They need to know that you are speaking with them and communicating with them. And they need protection. They need to know that their family unit will be taken care of by their spouse. So what do you expect me to do with these, you might be asking? So you give me a nice little list of needs that the other person wants or needs. I think by better understanding what your spouse needs, you can better address those issues. And I think that romance is the vehicle by which we go to meet those needs. Romance is the vehicle or the process which we use to meet those needs. So what is romance? Oscar Wilde once said that deceiving others, that is what the world calls romance. And Amanda Cross says, romance is the glamour which turns the dust of everyday life into a golden haze. What romance is not? Romance is not sex, nor is it marriage. Romance plays a part in both of those things. Romance plays a part in each one of those issues, but it is not itself. That is not the end. Romance does not end with those. Picture this, if you will. It's dark. The music is playing. All the boys are lined up along one side of the gym. All the girls are lined up along the other side. Little Stevie, he's the brave one. He's like, guys, should I do it? Should I do it? Yeah, Stevie, come on, you can do it. Okay, I'm going to go for it. And he gets 3 steps off the wall and he turns around. He's like, I can't, guys, I can't. Help me out. Come on, Stevie, you can do it, buddy, you can do it. So he makes that long, lonely trek across the gymnasium floor, walks right up to Susie. You want to dance? Okay. And then they make the trek back into the middle, and then that unleashes the floodgates. All the boys go rushing across the gym and start asking the girls to dance, and then all of a sudden you have your elementary school dance happening right there. It takes the brave boy, it takes the one person to make the lonely trek across the floor to pursue the girl. And that's what I would say romance is. Romance is the passionate pursuit of someone or something. So you can romance a bunch of stuff. You can romance your car. You can romance your house. You can romance your scrapbook. You can romance your guy. You can romance. There's a lot of things that you can romance, because if you think about it, your passionate pursuit, what you are passionately pursuing, that is what you are romancing. Now, most guys are wired hunter-gatherer kind of guys. And so they passionately pursue their girl until they get married. They stand in front of them on the day they get married. She's beautiful and beaming. And he's like, I did it. I caught her. Woo! It's done. Yeah. And that's it. It's over. You know? I've used up my romance. I'm good. And just the way they're wired, sometimes we forget to keep pursuing our wives. And so the question is not so much, am I romantic? But the question is more, where is my pursuit directed? Is my pursuit directed at my spouse, or is my pursuit directed at something else? What if I'm not a passionate kind of guy? What if I'm not a romantic kind of guy? What do I do? What if I'm not a romantic girl? What if I'm not a passionate girl and I don't really want to pursue my husband? What do I do then? You can tell where your pursuit is directed by assessing where you spend your time, your talent, or your treasure. You will know where you spend, where your pursuit is directed when you see where you spend your time, your talent, or your treasure. Jesus said, where your heart or where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Is your treasure laying with the person that you married? Does your spouse have your focus? Or is it something else? Where does God fit into this whole equation of romance? What does he have to say about it? God created these relationships. He not only wants to see them succeed, but he wants to see them flourish. He wants to see the vibrancy, the color, and the life come into your marriage relationship. So what does the Bible have to say about romance? We're going to look at two different instances. So if you have your Bible, you can open it up to the book of Hosea. And the story of Hosea is really fascinating. Hosea was a prophet in the Old Testament times, and during that time, Israel was getting, had their dumb on, okay? They weren't being very bright. And they decided to forsake what God was doing and decided to worship other idols. And so Hosea was called by God to, in essence, act out what God was doing for Israel. So God said to Hosea, Hosea, I want you to go. I want you to find a prostitute. I want you to marry her and bring her out of that lifestyle, and I want you to make her right, and I want you to make her a proper wife. Well, so Hosea goes and does this as kind of a demonstration of what God wanted to do for the nation Israel. And so Hosea marries this woman, and then she leaves him again. So he marries her for the first time, and then she leaves him. And we're just going to read Hosea chapter 3, and this is what it says about this whole interaction. The Lord said to me, go show love to your wife again, though she is loved by another and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love their sacred raisin cakes. So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethek of barley. Then I told her, you are to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. For the Israelites will live many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or idol. Afterwards, the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God, and David their king. They will come trembling and the Lord to the Lord and to his blessing in the last days. So for the married person, what does the Bible have to say about romance? Firstly, I think the Bible says that it's a two-way street. Let's just, in Hosea chapter 3, it says this, you are to live with me many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will live with you. Hosea isn't saying, look, it's your responsibility to stay here. It's your responsibility to stay with me. He's saying, no, you need to stay here, but I will be with you. I'm not going to make you be completely romantic to me and then totally take off, but I am going to engage you. I want this to be a two-way street. I am going to pursue you, and I want you to pursue me. On the day that you stood before the person you married, you made a commitment to God that you would love this person for the rest of your life. Pursue that person. Passionately pursue that person for everything that you're worth. Romance is a two-way street. If each of you are pursuing each other, there's not a lot of room for stuff outside to happen. If each of you are passionately pursuing the person you married, the person you committed to, there's not a lot of room for extracurricular activities. Secondly, for the married person, is it's meant to be exclusive. The Bible says that romance is meant to be exclusive. Matthew chapter 5, verse 27 and 28 says this. Find it first. You have heard it said, do not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery in his heart. When you start to pursue other interests, you start to forsake the vows that you took. When you start to pursue stuff outside the relationship in the office, hey, you know what? I really like that person. They treat me really well. You start to deviate the focus of your romance and your passionate pursuit away from the person that you committed to marry. Anna Alas says this, a true man does not need to romance a different girl every night. A true man romances the same girl for the rest of her life. So my challenge to you is keep pursuing the person that you married. And finally, it's going to cost you something. Romance is going to cost you something. You are going to need to invest your time, your talents, and your treasure. You will spend mental energy. You will spend physical energy. You will spend hard-earned cash pursuing the person that you married. You know what? I promise you it's worth it. So what if you're single? What do you do if you're single? And, you know, okay, this is Nathan. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. This is going to help me. Never, you know. What do you do if you're single? What does the Bible have to say about the single? So romance for the single. Really, as a single person, you are going to enter different seasons. And the first season that you're going to enter is the season of winter. And by that, I'm going to turn to the book of Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs, whatever you want to call it. And chapter 2, verse 11 and 12 says this, see, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The winter has passed. Winter in the Bible really is a season of preparation. When they talk about winter, they talk about the season where God starts to prepare and get you ready for what is to come. Maybe as a single, you feel kind of like you can identify with this person here. Identify with that? As a single, You know, you feel like you want to move forward in your relationships, but it just feels like nothing is happening. You know, allow God to use that time in your life. Allow God to use this season of winter in your life to prepare you to be the person who He wants you to be when you get married. Allow God to use the season of winter in your life to cultivate the character and the passion and the attitude of the person He needs you to be to get married. You know, I was thinking about it. Without winter, there's no pond hockey. Without winter, we don't get maple syrup. Without winter, you don't get snowball fights and snow globes and yellow snow and like all that great stuff. Without winter, you don't appreciate spring as much. And so I urge you, as a single person who feels like they're going through the season of winter, allow God to cultivate and prepare you for what He is getting ready for you, or He's asking you to achieve. The next season is the season of perfection. Song of Songs, chapter 2, verses 8 to 10 says this: "Listen, my lover, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My lover is like a gazelle or a young stag." That's a picture. "Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My lover spoke and said to me, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come with me.'" What this is saying, the season of perfection is saying that, you know, you exit the season of winter and then you start a relationship with somebody and there is nothing wrong with them. They are perfect in any way. You can, you know, "There is my young stag. He is floating across the hills. He is stronger and bigger and faster and better than anything I have ever seen in my entire life. And there is no faults with him at all," you know. And then you get married and you wake up the next day and he has morning breath that could peel the paint off a Mack truck. And the season of winter, or the season of perfection, is the time where you see the person and you are infatuated with them. George Bernard Shaw says, "Love consists of overestimating the differences between one woman and another." I think that plays a picture in this season of perfection. One word of caution when you are in the season of perfection: that you should limit your time together, you should limit your talk, how much you share with the person, and you should limit your touch. Because if you go too far with any one of those areas, you put undue pressure on yourselves. And you feel like you need to live up to certain expectations that you have gone too far. It's like in the movie Top Gun, you're writing checks your body can't cash. That's what happens in the season of perfection. If you do not limit your time together, what you talk about, or your touch, it creates unnecessary pressure on the relationship. Now, the outline, for some reason, the outline got cut off. There's a little bit more, so you're going to have to do a little bit more writing. It's still going to be on the screen. Sorry about that. The last season that you're going to go through is the season of discovery. And this is really realistically the time, if you're thinking, where you're getting ready to be engaged. And this is the time where you start to talk about your plans and your past. Your past and your plans. This is the time where you start to discover who that person really is, what has made them click, what makes them tick, and where what they are trying to get out of their life. The important part with this whole, the seasons as a single, is to guard your purity. No matter what, in the seasons that you walk through as a single, it's important to guard your purity. Chapter 2, verse 15 says this, "Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom." Basically, the picture that the writer is giving is, we want to remove anything that could possibly ruin or destroy what we are trying to build in our relationship. So it is important as a single to always guard your purity. You know, because it's important. As a single, you can start to romance your future spouse right now. As a single, you may not even know them, but you can start to romance your future spouse. When I got married to Jamie, shortly after we got married, or no, just before we got married, she handed me a book. I'm like, "What is this?" She's like, "These are letters that I've been writing to you since I was 16. She was preparing herself for the day that we would be married. She was preparing herself and romancing me, even though she didn't know me. And it is possible to do that as a single person if you are going there. So here you are, and you want to add some color and some vibrancy and some life back into your relationship. How do you do it? Well, I'm going to toss down what I call the romance challenge. Okay? Here is the romance challenge. For the next blank days, I want you to pick a number of days. For the next blank days, it shouldn't be less than a week, though. It should not be less than a week. For the next blank days, I am going to commit to pursue whoever should be your spouse with my time, my talents, and my treasures. I am going to commit to do random acts of love and pursue them with everything that I have. So maybe it's a special night getaway at a hotel. Maybe it's just a rose on your table at breakfast time. Maybe it's just a love note. Maybe it's calling them in the middle of the day just to find out how they're doing. I want you to pursue the person you married with everything that you have for the next however many days you want to take the challenge. Now, there's been a movie that has just come out called Fireproof, and in it they talk about something called the love dare. If you need help coming up with ideas, pick up this book, The Love Dare, okay? It will give you some great ideas on how to continually pursue the person that you committed to marry. Maybe you're a single person, and you're like, how does this romance challenge fit with me? I want you to commit for however many days to pursue becoming the person that God wants you to be. And so today, let us move forward in pursuing our romance with our spouses or with our future spouses. That's a weird word, spouse. You know. Anyway, I don't know how to say that. Spouses? One spouse? Probably a good idea. One spouse. Thank you. Thank you for that. We don't live in Bountiful. Okay. Did I say that out loud? Ah, shoot. Okay. I think we need to pray right about now. So God, today as we commit to bring vibrancy and life and color back into our marriages, God, I want to thank you for the marriages that do have vibrancy and life and color in them. God, I thank you for the passionate pursuit of the spouses towards each other. God, today, for those who know that they can move forward in that area of their relationship, I pray that you would give them the courage, the strength, the tenacity to hang on to what you have built in their lives. God, for the singles, I pray that today you will start to teach them how to become the person you want them to be for their potential spouse. God, today I pray that you would start to prepare in them the character and the attitudes and the things that you need to build in them so that they will potentially be a fantastic spouse. And God, most of all, I thank you for your pursuit of us. God, I thank you that ultimately our model of romance is you pursuing us so greatly that you decided to say, Jesus, I need you to not be God right now, and I need you to go live on this earth and interact with these people so that they can see how much I actually love them. So God, I thank you for that beautiful model of your pursuit of us. And today, God, help us see how much you value us because you pursued us to that great length. God, help us see how much you care about us because you pursued us. God, help us see how much we're valued because you pursued us to such a great length. Because you wanted to have a relationship with us. Maybe you're here and you don't have that relationship with God. And you've been hearing about romance this morning and all about the pursuit of somebody's spouse, but God pursues you 1,000 times more than we could ever pursue our spouse. So maybe you're here and you want to say, God, I want to accept that pursuit. I want to start a relationship with you. You're here with everybody heads bowed and eyes closed. Why don't you just slip up your hand and say, Nathan, this morning I want to start to pursue God. So God, this morning, give us the courage to pursue you and pursue what you're doing in our lives. Your name. Amen. Maybe you're here and you want prayer about something. Could be about what we talked about this morning. Could be something totally different. As the band leads us in a few songs, I just encourage you to step out and somebody or a few people will come and surround you and be more than happy to pray with you, all right?